This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of July 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 15th of July, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: larger pool moves closer. Is Top Gear job on the menu for Chef James? And barracks may turn to homes. So, Tony, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Winchester could have a near-Olympic-sized swimming pool. Sports campaigners are optimistic that the pool, part of a new leisure centre to replace the River Park Leisure Centre, will be given the green light. In a surprising turn of events, Winchester City Council cabinet members voted to recommend the 50-metre, 8-lane pool against the view of the council leader, Stephen Godfrey, and deputy, Vicky Weston. Councillors are set to decide this month whether to refurbish the River Park Leisure Centre or build a new one in Bar End, which has the space to provide the larger pool. The new centre at either location would also have a 12-court sports hall, hydrotherapy pool, 4 squash courts, a fitness gym with 4 studios, soft play and cafe. However, concerns were raised over the implications of borrowing $4.5 million to pay for the pool, which would bring the overall project cost to about $34 million. The project itself has secured funding from Winchester University, the Pinder Trust, and there's also a chance Hampshire County Council could contribute. Winchester SALT and Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club have been calling for the city to build on 2012 London Olympics legacy. The Penguins currently does not have a facility for competitive swimming, which the new facility will provide. Chief Executive of Penguins, Sam Fulling, also argued there is a clear demand and need for the pool, as they have more than 100 children on their waiting list. Emma Back, Chief Executive of the Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, said the facility is vital in encouraging people to get active. She said, "We're all hoping you opt to build facilities that are large enough and flexible enough to serve our community for many years to come. If you do, we'll work with you to ensure the facilities are well designed, with programs of use that maximise participation and meet local needs. We are in another Olympic year now, with Rio 2016 opening in just a month's time. Please seize this opportunity. Please invest our resources wisely. You have the chance to do something wonderful for this community, which will benefit people for decades to come." Liberal Democrat County Councillor Jackie Porter said the pool will be vital for the general health of Winchester as a city. Councillor Frank Pearson said he favours the 50-metre pool, but is concerned about the financial implications. "We should go for a 50-metre pool if we can afford it, but we do need to update costing. The matter will be discussed again at a full Winchester City Council meeting on Wednesday, July the 20th.
Is Top Gear job on the menu for Chef James? Could a former Winchester hotel chef be the man to take over the Top Gear helm from departing host Chris Evans? National media speculation was rife over who would replace the Radio 2 DJ after he announced he would be stepping down from the role after just one critically mauled series. Now, TV chef James Martin, who lives in the village near Winchester, has been linked to the job, with fans keen for him to take over the BBC 2 show. Evans replaced Top Gear frontman Jeremy Clarkson after the star was sacked last year following a fracas with a producer. The newly rebooted motoring show, which is also hosted by American Friends star Matt LeBlanc, has struggled to maintain the audience size it once enjoyed when it had Clarkson, Richard Hammond and James May in the driving seats. Now fans of the former Saturday Kitchen host Martin are calling for him to take over. Rumours around Martin being linked with Top Gear began after he quit Saturday Kitchen in April, believed to be because he would not be able to host both Top Gear and the live Saturday morning cookery show. Martin said he was leaving to pursue new projects. Aged just 21, he was the launch chef at the first Hotel Duvin in Southgate Street in 1994. He worked in the kitchen for several years before moving into TV in the late 1990s. The star retweeted Evans's announcement that he will be stepping down. The TV chef is a keen motorist, having been part of Evans's Car Fest in 2015 at Laverstoke Park Farm in Overton, and is the owner of a number of high-powered sports cars. He also hosted his own car and food-based tour of the UK called Plates, Mates and Automobiles. And Martin and Evans have worked together on the Dirty Dozen charity event at Chewton Glen Hotel in the New Forest. When approached, Martin's representatives declined to comment and said that he was currently filming. And there is a photograph of Chris Evans and Chef James Martin joyfully smiling and pointing a finger at each other, arms around each other, at Chewton Glen Hotel last autumn. There's the hotel in the far background and what appears to be a Porsche just a little bit behind him.
Barracks may turn to homes. Sir John Moore Barracks could be bulldozed for a housing development as the Ministry of Defence looks to capitalise on its estate. Last week, the Chronicle revealed talks between Winchester City Council, WCC, and the MOD had taken place to discuss the sale of the 86-hectare site near Littleton. However, City Council leader Stephen Godfrey said civic chiefs would resist any plan for residential development. Councillor Ian Tate said the MOD will want to replace the site with housing, adding, "A well-connected source has told me they, the MOD, want residential development. They will want to maximise the value of the site, and it is also the easiest option. However, what Winchester wants is commercial space." Councillor Tate added that official confirmation will be released before the end of July. The MOD is currently reviewing its estate as it looks to cut it by 30%. Last week, Councillor Godfrey wrote to Defence Minister Mark Lancaster to express the Council's stance on the site, on the sale. He said, "Should a decision be made to vacate the barracks, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation should be aware that WCC will resist any proposal to develop the barracks primarily for housing. I would expect the local community would also voice significant concerns about such a proposal." The barracks, the base for the Army Training Regiment Winchester, welcomes more than 1,000 recruits each year who go through 14 weeks of training. It also employs around 300 staff. In January, the regiment was rated outstanding in all areas of its development of new fighters and instructors. Councillor Godfrey added, We would be very supportive of any appropriate proposal that conforms with our local plan. WCC is very keen to exploit opportunities for use of any redundant public land, particularly to retain local employment. When asked to comment, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, gave the same statement as in May. It read, "We currently have no plans to dispose of Sir John Moore Barracks in Winchester. However, the MOD is conducting a review of its estate, which will be announced later this year. This work is ongoing, and no decisions about the future of individual sites, other than those that have already been announced, have been made at this point." And there's a photograph of the Army Training Regiment, or part of it anyway, six soldiers marching in a group, the others not in the photograph, in their combat jackets, carrying their Sten guns and wearing their blue berets.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then that will be followed by announcements and what's on. Before we do the death notices, there is a reminder from the Hampshire County Council Adult Services Sensory Team that sensory services are available to those with a sight loss or dual loss. You can contact them at any time if your situation has changed, you're entitled to an assessment or a reassessment of your needs. And the telephone number for the Sensory Services Team for referrals and inquiries is 0300 555 1386. That's 0300 555 1386. And now the death announcements. Brockhurst, Dorothy Brockhurst, known as Peggy, who died peacefully at home, aged 90. Carr, James Thomas Carr, died peacefully at home, aged 81. Chester Brown, Ian Clive Chester Brown, died on the 25th of June, aged 86. Robinson, Steve Robinson, passed away at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice on the 2nd of July, aged 62. And Terry, Rosemary Terry, known as Jean, died peacefully on the 3rd of July, aged 94. And now we move on to Christian comment, read by Albie.
And Christian comment comes from Mary Gray and poses the question, who is really my neighbour? One of the most loved gospel stories, we wonder if it could have any more surprises. So who were the Samaritans really? They were not simply outcasts, but the despised enemies of the Jews. Where listeners would have expected a Jew to be the hero of Jesus' story, instead they get a shock. The hero is a Samaritan. Only by understanding this reality can the power of this story emerge. The story gives us a vision of life rather than death. It insists that enemies can prove to be neighbours, compassion has no boundaries, and that judging people on the basis of their religion or ethnicity will probably leave us dying in a ditch. I think there's another meaning too. Recently, I was in Gaza, where a friend and I decided to take a break from visiting refugee camps and walk by the sea. Beautiful in Gaza. To our surprise and dismay, our way was blocked by a group of tall, bearded men who looked fierce to us. "We only want to walk on the beach," we protested. "No, don't go there," they repeated more kindly. "It's dangerous." Looking at the gigantic breakers, we saw they were right. And this was Hamas, the Muslim ruling party in Gaza. Change our stereotypes, we thought. and I immediately thought of the words of the Samaritan story. Jews don't speak to Samaritans. The same message appeared in Donald Nichols' memories of his time as rector of Tantur Ecumenical Institute in Outer Jerusalem. Returning one evening from a meeting in the West Bank, he and his driver were flagged down, again by a group of tall, bearded men, Palestinian Muslims. Fearfully, he stopped, and the men begged him, "Please, we need your car. Our sister is on her way to her wedding when our car broke down. She cannot walk through the mud in her wedding dress." Of course, he lent his car and found himself invited to the wedding, where he spent hours of enjoyment and made new friendships. Change your stereotypes. Again, the message. Jesus chose as setting for his story a road that was known to be dangerous because of the very real threat of robbers. The story deepens the message glimpsed in other places. In the story of the healing of the 10 lepers, only the Samaritan returns to thank Jesus. Another daring step that Jesus takes is to enter into dialogue with a Samaritan woman at the well. To talk to such a woman could endanger his reputation. Every day at home, I look at a beautiful picture of this story. The figure embracing a dying figure could be a woman. The horse, remember, the Samaritan was mounted, envelops the two in what seems to be a caring position. It is an imaginative depiction of the compassion of the story that includes animals. And so the story's meaning challenges us all anew to discover and practice an ever-deepening compassion.
Thank you, Albie. Now we move on to letters from to the editor, and unsurprisingly, we start off with three letters relating to the recent referendum. Tony.
Going to the dogs. Sir, post-Brexit, never in the field of British democracy has so much hissy-fitting been given by so many to so few. The Brexit campaign was brilliantly conceived, a right-wing hijacking of the democratic principle based on the project fear, incompetence and a false belief that control of our borders and access to the single market are going to happen simultaneously. A great nation, once renowned for its spirit, generosity and tolerance, is now going to the dogs. And we have the Westminster creche arguing whether we should be using butchers or Purina dog food. But it is what it is. The people of the nation needs to flag down a black cab and head for Reality Street. Another referendum stroke special EU status is not going to happen. This country will exit Europe. The majority win. That's democracy. This is not Denmark and the Maastricht Treaty syndrome where you voted the wrong way. Have another go until you get it right. No democratic process can ignore a majority of more than 1 million votes. That would be political suicide. D.N. Grant, Romans Road, Winchester.
The next letter is from Colin Hayden of Green Hill Road, Winchester. And it's headed, "Worth the Fight." Sir, although I did not vote for him, I believed that in Mr. Bryan, Winchester had at last found a sound MP after John Brown, Jerry Malone and Mark Oughton. Following his statement about the referendum's result, however, I'm no longer sure. It's worrying that an MP and a history graduate seemingly does not appreciate that in this country, sovereignty lies with the King or Queen in Parliament. The buck stops there. Nor is it a case of just personal preference or asking the question until you get the answer you want. You keep asking the question and arguing until others concur with what you are intellectually convinced is right. Did Churchill espouse appeasement because others said he should? Brexit will impoverish the politics, economic life, society and culture of this country for generations and threatens to destroy the United Kingdom. The prize is worth the fight. Cambridge MP Daniel Zeichner is in the same position as Mr. Brine. He states that he will not vote for Brexit and will vote Remain in the Commons. I disliked many of the policies of Mrs. Thatcher, but respected her as a conviction politician. Can anyone respect a lack of conviction politician? Please, Mr. Brine, can reconsider. To quote Mrs. T, this is no time to go wobbly. Colin Hayden, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
And the third letter on the referendum under the heading Democracy comes from Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas. Sir, I yelled, "I don't believe it," to quote One Foot in the Grave, when I read last week's Chronicle's letters instructing our MP to ignore the result of the referendum and to refuse to do anything that Winchester didn't vote for, especially the one from my namesake. The fact that there are people who seem to not understand what democracy means is frightening. It is a very black and white concept. If you win, you have won. Instead of refusing to accept the result, we should all roll up our sleeves and see what you can do to make the best of the situation. We could start by not expecting to always have our own way. Is it my imagination? Or is it only so-called progressive, left-thinking people, dare I suggest Liberal Democrats, who stamp their feet and say, "You can't do that, I didn't vote for it"? I don't recall Conservatives storming around every time a Labour government is elected, do you?
Congratulations to Council on Poole. Sir, I am not a resident in the Winchester City Council area, but a very regular user of the River Park swimming facilities, swimming intermittently for Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club over nearly 60 years. I welcome the news that the council propose a 50-metre pool in the development of new leisure facilities. The existing facilities, with only a 25-metre pool, are tired and at times grossly overcrowded. Nevertheless, they have served swimmers very well since the closure of the outdoor Lido pool. Hearty congratulations to the council members on this momentous and most sensible decision. I am sure that future generations will look back with gratitude to this time. So centrally located in Hampshire, Winchester looks set now to have the potential to become a regional centre for swimming and its future development. Mike votes, Hocombe Drive, Chandos Ford.
This letter is from Simon Cook, who's a retired city councillor from Shepherdstown, Oldsford. So, one sad bit of news was that recently reported in the Chronicle was the announcement that the chief executive, Simon Eden, had decided to leave the council. I was disappointed because I was aware how hard he had worked on behalf of the city councillors in Winchester. As a former director and as a city councillor for the past 14 years, I am well qualified to judge his many qualities as a chief executive. He carried out the wishes of the ruling politicians in a thoroughly professional, competent, and particularly loyal way. However, his decision has highlighted an issue. The issue is that there are a few councillors who are still unaware of the fact that it is not the officers who make decisions on development and investment. Hence the recent problem with the Silver Hill project, were entirely the responsibility of the ruling majority party, who made their decisions and directed the officers accordingly. I hope that the councillors who have worked with Simon Eden during the past years will publicly pay him due credit for his hard work and integrity, expressing regret at his decision to leave. Simon Cook, retired City Councillor, Shepherdstown, Oldford.
And now a letter under the heading Housing Issue from Peter Hargraves of Worthy Lane, Winchester. Sir, after reading about the further delay in the building of 2,000 new homes and a new school at Barton Farm, Chronicle, June 30th, I was astonished to hear a prominent political person state that the problem of a delay in the new school was not serious as the new homes had not been built. Did they not consider that the further delay means there will be 2,000 families desperately needing a home who have to suffer further delays while the council dithers? Those 2,000 families will also have many children waiting for a school place. But WCC does not seem to be taking the delay seriously and seems oblivious to the human misery it is causing. The council are still in a state of confusion over Silver Hill and are allowing former Conservative rebel councillor Kim Gottlieb to run all over the council after he had caused considerable expense to council taxpayers and terrify them into appointing him to a new board to oversee further development at Silver Hill. Even though the councillor is part of a consortium to develop a grotesque building at Chiswick Roundabout, dubbed the Octopus, that is considered a planning disaster. Why is the city council so afraid of him? Hasn't the council got anybody with enough backbone to stand up to him? After continually shredding funding to sheltered housing, the council were warned of the serious consequences. Subsequently, a pensioner was eventually found dead in his flat 2 weeks after he died. Our me MP, Steve Brine, promised an investigation, but nothing has appeared. But it won't make any difference as the Tory party have already decided to target the elderly for savage cuts.
Thank you. That concludes the letters to the editor. Now we're going to step back in time 200 years, Tony.
200 years ago, July 15th, 1816. Naked cheek. Ladies who are accustomed to wear their dresses extremely low in the back and bosom or off the shoulders are particularly requested to be aware of a person who has for some time past frequented all places of public amusement and many private parties. He is an elderly gentleman of venerable appearance and correct manners. His constant practice, when he observes a lady dressed in the manner above described, is with an almost imperceptible and apparently accidental pressure of a little instrument which he carries in his hand, to imprint the following words upon her back or shoulders. Naked, but not ashamed. End of the world. The Italian astronomer, who has foretold that the world will be destroyed on the 18th of this month, is not the first that ventured on such outrageous fooleries. In 1712, Mr. Whiston, having calculated that the comet would appear on the 4th of October, added that a total dissolution of the world by fire would take place on the following Friday. The stocks fell considerably, and there was a great run on the banks. A Dutch captain, then in the river, threw his powder overboard that the ship might not be damaged. No conflagration, however, took place the following day.
100 years ago, July the 15th, 1916. Somme success. Fighting on the Somme battlefield during the weekend was mainly confined to the extreme right of the British and left of the French lines on the north of the river, east of Montauban. Our troops pressed on from Bernafay into Thrones Wood, where they captured 130 prisoners on Saturday. The French, who earlier in the day had taken Hardecourt and a knoll to the north of the village, joined in this attack, which was against strong defences. The objectives fixed on were gained. In the afternoon, the enemy counterattacked, but failed completely under the fire of the 18-pounders and 75s, leaving, in addition to the 130 taken by us, 260 prisoners in the hands of the French. And the other item is headed Fire in Athens. Great excitement was caused in Athens on Thursday night by the news of a serious forest fire, one of the many during the last few weeks of unprecedented heat, menacing the royal palace at Tatois, where their majesties were in summer residence. The wind carried the flames towards the palace, which was hurriedly evacuated just before it took fire. In addition to the royal summer palace, the Crown Prince's pavilion and the Queen Mother's villa were destroyed. But the tomb of King George was saved. Hundreds of soldiers felled a wide strip of pine trees around the monument. The fire, which has a front of 7 miles, extended during the night.
And two articles from 50 years ago, July the 9th, 1966. The first under the heading Coastal Protection. Subject to the views of four other local authorities, Hampshire County Council is to ask the Minister of Housing and Local Government to sanction planning safeguards on two at present unprotected stretches of Hampshire coastline. The pieces of coastline concerned consist of most of the shoreline of Hayling Island and a strip between Hythe and Fawley. The eastern and western shorelines of the island were of high scenic and ecological interest, the eastern part falling within the Chichester Harbour area of outstanding natural beauty. Most of the island was unallocated for development, and there had been pressure for uses such as the extension of holiday camps and new yacht harbours. And the second item, big tree planted. A Sequoia Dendron Giganteum, giant redwood, has been planted in the grounds of the new Winchester School of Art. It is a gift from the men of the trees and is dedicated to the memory of Sir Winston Churchill. On Friday week, a plaque was placed on the tree by Mr. Richard St. Barb Baker, founder of the Men of the Trees, who had just returned from Kenya, where, in response to his appeal, thousands of Africans have banded together to plant trees against the oncoming desert.
And 25 years ago, on July the 12th, 1991, there are two items. Law Courts riot. The design of Winchester Crown Court's cells was blamed by Winchester and Alton Member of Parliament John Brown for the riots that brought chaos to the building this Tuesday. Mr. Brown told the Hampshire Chronicle, "I'd like to know how it was allowed to happen, and I can see three areas to investigate. The first is the design of the prisoner holding facilities. The cell block was built specifically to handle tough prisoners, such as those from the IRA." Mr. Brown's comments were sparked by an incident which saw Winchester's court buildings besieged by an army of police. Six inmates facing charges relating to the Dartmoor prison riots began to wreak havoc in their cells. And the second item, marked Independence Battle. Hampshire's Education Committee is strongly opposed to plans to remove all post-16 colleges from local education authorities and establish them as independent corporate bodies, funded and monitored by an appointed council. Councillors of all political persuasions were resolutely against government proposals contained in the White Paper on post-16 education. Mr. Miles Hudson, a co-opted member of the committee, commented, I think it's better to have elected people in control rather than unelected. Dr. P. Lockwood said members should plead for a delay in implementation of the bill. Now we move back to the current time and we have a Chronicle editorial comment. Tony.
Sorry. It's good news that Cabinet members at Winchester City Council voted to defy their own council leader, Stephen Godfrey, and his deputy, Vicky Weston, to opt for a 50-metre pool as its preferred option in the leisure centre redevelopment. That tells us several things. One is that Councillor Godfrey can hardly be said to have an iron grip on his team, that he was outvoted by his colleagues, which is actually quite refreshing. The second is that it looks like Highcliffe Bar End is the preferred location for the new centre, as the River Park Leisure Centre in Hyde is too small for a 50-metre pool. These are early days, and the supporters of the near Olympic-sized pool, it would only have 8 lanes and not the requisite 10, would be wise not to celebrate just yet. Many, if not most, residents in the Highcliffe Bar End area are perhaps unaware of what is proposed for their neighbourhood, and when they are fully apprised, they may not be happy as the scheme could involve the loss of open space. The 50-metre pool will obviously be more expensive to build and run than a 25-metre pool, and that could still be a deal-breaker. But the boost to participation in sport is to be welcomed. Bizarrely, the 900-member Penguins Swimming Club currently has nowhere to competitively swim, as the pool at the River Park Leisure Centre is fractionally too small.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, Graham.
Right. First person this week is by Andrew Napier. And someone, interestingly, considering the last letter I read out, is headed Lessons from the Somme. No apologies for bringing Brexit up as a topic. Most adults in Hampshire took part in the vote. That will be more than a footnote when historians write the history of the UK in 100 years' time. Talking of 100 years, you would have to have been living in a cave to have missed the 100th anniversary of the first day of the Battle of the Somme that started on July the 1st, 1916, and lasted until November. Am I the only one who has noticed the disparity between the behaviour of people in 1916 and 2016, a difference that puts us today in a poor light? In 1916, teenagers and young men, mostly in their 20s, faced death calmly and with little fuss. Just before 7:30 a.m. on that beautiful July morning, tens of thousands waited in their trenches. These men, our fathers, grandfathers and great-grandfathers, chatted, gathered their thoughts, checked their weapons and equipment, smoked a cigarette, prayed, maybe joked. Then their officers blew a whistle and they climbed out to advance on the German guns. Around 60,000 were killed or injured on that first day. Yes, nearly twice the population of Winchester, sliced down by machine guns and artillery. Those men were essentially the same people as us, with the same fears, hopes and dreams, but they went over the top calmly, with no thoughts of self and the narcissistic values of our culture today. Their loved ones at home displayed the same dignity. Of course, making exact comparisons between the values and culture of soldiers in 1916 and the general public in 2016 are impossible. But I think we can contrast that heroic stoicism with the collective nervous breakdown of a nation. Am I the only one to have been amazed by the reaction to the Brexit vote? The country is going a little mad. A friend referendum has been held, a clear decision has been made, and now supposedly intelligent people are thinking of clever ways to subvert the decision. It would not be too extreme to say that it would be a betrayal of what those men on the Western Front were fighting for. The idea that the Remainers somehow know best, and so we should have another vote, is utterly ridiculous. So there were lies in the campaign, but there are always lies in particular political campaigns. Amid the chaos, we have also seen our would-be leaders, Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, both behaving like sixth formers. Andrew Leadsom, self-destructing over her CV tweaking and sly dig at Theresa May's childlessness. Labour ignoring its responsibilities as the opposition to get involved in a civil war that threatens to turn it from being a national party into a near irrelevant sect where socialist purity of thought is somewhere more important than striving to win power and get things done to help ordinary people. A huge number of Remainers are failing to see the bigger picture. Should somehow a second referendum be held and the House of Commons decide not to invoke Article 50 to start the leave process, do people actually realise what that would mean? It will be the subversion of democracy and a slippery slope. We may not like the Brexit decision. I don't like the decision. But bigger issues are now at stake. I like the saying of Chou Enlai, the Chinese foreign minister, when asked in 1972 what he thought the long-term impact would be of the French Revolution of 1789. His reply, "It is too early to say." We too need to take a slightly longer term and calmer view of these things. The nation should take the men of the First World War as an example. They did their duty, and we must do the same. Accept the decision and make the best of it.
And now Bel Gorham's alternative look at the news. Three items. First item, concerns for tree after barbecue damage. A bad week for beech trees. On St Catherine's Hill, concern is growing after a barbecue damaged one of the mature trees in the central clump. And there's a photograph of it. I'll come to that in a moment. A reader who was walking with her grandchildren was horrified to see the damage and said she feared a heavy storm could knock it down. She said, "I'm concerned that if we have a big wind like we did in 1987, it would be like dominoes and the tree would knock down others." And the photograph shows the charred and blackened stump of the tree, not stump, but the roots of the tree and the bottom of the tree. And in Twyford, the diseased beech outside the parish hall succumbed last Wednesday. And there's a photograph of it, a bald trunk. And I say bald because all its hair has been cut off. There's not a branch to be seen, just the stubs sticking out of the trunk. And on the ground, the trunk or the branches have all been power sawed up into small pieces. And a second item, there must be something in the air. The Worthy Road car park is currently on the traveller's circuit as a group has moved in, the second time in a few weeks. Taking up the spaces means there are fewer to go round and motorists have to drive into the city centre, adding to congestion. Interestingly, only hours later, a public meeting was held at the Winchester Club next door on Tuesday to discuss air pollution caused by traffic. And the third item, power gantries are a temporary intrusion. One of the finest spots in England, Winchester Cathedral Close, at the heart of English history for 1,000 years. So most people will be pleased to hear that this aluminium contraption is not a permanent addition to the scene. A cathedral spokesman said the gantry and the one matching it on the other side of the cloister garth are a temporary part of the Capital Works project. They carry extra power to the new Wessex Learning Centre until the works in the cathedral itself have been completed and the new power supply installed.
Thank you. Now we move on to this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. And we've got a few items. On Saturday the 23rd of July, the Alsford Summer Fair is on as part of the Hampshire Food Festival. On Tuesday the 26th of July, in Winchester Cathedral, there's a lunchtime concert, and that's a recorder concert played by Irene Anderson. On Saturday the 30th of July, between midday and 5 p.m, in Summers Road Recreation Park at Stanmore, there's the Party in the Park. It's a free event, and I remember reading some items about it for Winchester City Council, and it seemed like a very lively party. So Party in the Park, midday till 5 p.m, Summers Road Recreation Park at Stanmore, and that's Saturday the 30th of July. There's also some open gardens. The Hospital of St Cross have open gardens on Sunday the 24th of July between 2 and 5 p.m. On Thursday the 28th to Sunday the 31st of July, again in the afternoon, 2 till 5:30, Tanglefoot at Crawley is open under the garden scheme. And Longstock Gardens at Stockbridge are open the first and third Sundays of each month between 2 and 5 p.m. For more information on Longstock Gardens, telephone 01962 776 243. Lighting up time on Friday the 15th of July ends at 5:08 a.m. and begins at 9:13 p.m. And on Wednesday the 20th of July, it ends at 5:14 a.m. and begins at 9:08 p.m. And a reminder, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Tony.
MG Show brings past alive. Cars with a Great British mark attracted much interest when on show in Winchester Cathedral Close. Winchester MG Owners Club put on a display of MG sports cars last Saturday. There were a variety on display, dating from the 1950s through to the last of the mark that were finally manufactured in China until a few years ago. Models included a 1957 Magnet Saloon, MGA Roadster, MG Midgets, MGBs in Roadster and GT form, a six-cylinder MGC, MGB V8, and a 1990s 4-litre MG RV8, and last of the line MGTFs. Steve Farrell, club secretary, said, "We were really pleased at the reception we received. The public showed a lot of interest, and the older cars seemed to stir a lot of fond memories. The younger generation were intrigued, and several children got the opportunity to have a go in the driving seat and pose for photographs. People seem to have forgotten just how small these cars are compared to today's modern saloons. Wooden dashboards, tiny chrome windscreen wipers, and enormous steering wheels seem to cause much amusement. Several club members took part in a Cathedral Tower tour and enjoyed a bird's eye view of Winchester. And there's a lovely, unusually sunny photograph of a view from the cathedral roof of some of the MGs parked in the close.
Former soldier admits assault. A Winchester former soldier tricked his way into the home of his former partner and beat up her new boyfriend as he lay asleep in bed. Benjamin Thompson rained blows onto Aaron Brown before leaving the house, Winchester Crown Court heard. Thompson, aged 29, of Drayton Street, Stanmore, had been unable to accept the end of the long-standing relationship with Emily Hamilton and tracked her down to the house in Hedge End on April the 13th. When Mr. Brown's 75-year-old grandfather opened the door, Thompson said his name was Alex before finding the bedroom and launching the attack, said Simon Edwards, prosecuting. Miss Hamilton of Main Road, Colden Common, told the police, "I remember it was dark and someone was leaning over me and jumped on to Aaron. I didn't realise who it was at first. He had his knees on his arms and was repeatedly punching Aaron in the face. Aaron couldn't defend himself." Thompson had also smashed Miss Hamilton's mobile phone when they met by chance in Winchester on March the 6th and sent her threatening emails on May the 5th, in which he said he would beat Mr. Brown to a pulp. Thompson admitted assault, occasioning actual bodily harm, criminal damage, and sending malicious communications. He was jailed for 25 months and ordered on release to pay £1,500 compensation to Mr. Brown. Robert Forrest, mitigating, said Thompson had served 9 years in the Royal Engineers from 2006 to 2015, including two tours of Afghanistan in which he had worked as a medic and in bomb disposal. He was suffering post-traumatic stress disorder and was clinically depressed. Mr. Forrest said Thompson was an angry and aggressive person, but that the army had controlled that. Thompson and Miss Hamilton had been together for several years, with a break in 2011 to 13, and had got engaged in 2014 before it collapsed for good last year. Sentencing Judge Keith Cutler said Thompson has shown no remorse post-attack and had sent the aggressive emails less than a month later. "You are a jealous man, quite incapable of controlling your emotions." The judge jailed him for 18 months for the assault, 6 months for the emails, and 1 month for the criminal damage. He also imposed a restraining order barring any contact with Miss Hamilton or Mr. Brown for 10 years. And there is a small photograph of Mr. Benjamin Thompson, just looking like anybody else. You wouldn't think that butter would melt in his mouth. There you are.
Hat-trick hero Hearst's 1966 World Cup shirt fails to sell at auction. The shirt worn by Sir Geoff Hearst in the 1966 World Cup final has failed to sell at auction. Experts estimated the shirt would fetch up to £500,000 as it went under the hammer, nearly 50 years after the footballing hero's key role in England's greatest soccer triumph. The red long-sleeved jersey with the famous Three Lions badge on the front and number 10 in white on the back was worn by Sir Geoff Hearst as he became the first and only player to score a hat-trick in a World Cup final. Sotheby's estimated the Cotton Umbro jersey would attract bids of between £300,000 and £500,000 at the sale in London on Tuesday. But a spokeswoman for the auction house said, "The shirt is hugely important and a valuable piece of footballing history, and it generated a great deal of interest ahead of the sale. though widely admired in the months preceding the auction, and despite bidding in the sales room, the shirt failed to reach its reserve price, so unfortunately did not find a buyer today. Sir Geoff was awarded a place in the 1966 starting lineup after striker Jimmy Greaves was injured earlier in the tournament, and went on to guarantee his place in history by scoring the decisive goals in England's 4-2 win over West Germany. And there's a photograph of Geoff Hurst scoring his hat-trick goal against West Germany in the 1966 World Cup final. How do I know that it's the hat-trick goal? Because there's a scoreboard in the background which says England 3, West Germany 2. And that ball is on its way to the back of the net. Geoff Hurst is flying through the air, both feet about, ooh, good 2 feet off the ground, I suppose, delivering the kick and beating the German fullback and leaving everyone else a long way away in the background.
City branded one of the worst polluted. It's killing people. This was the stern message from Winchester residents after the city was branded one of the worst polluted areas in the county. Winchester Action on Climate Change and Friends of the Earth, who held a meeting on Tuesday, say 40 to 50 people die early in Winchester every year because of air pollution. The meeting at the Winchester Club was attended by around 50 members of the public. A report from independent experts in February showed air quality is particularly bad in St George's Street, Romsey Road and other heavy traffic roads. This led the City Council to commission research into air quality. Chris Holloway of Winchester ACC said everyone is worried about the illegal levels of air pollution in Winchester. But the problem isn't new. Public Health England told us in 2014 that 51 adults were dying early every year across the district because of air pollution. It's time to take decisive action to save lives. One of the solutions raised at the meeting was the conversion of inner city car parks for low emission vehicle use only, rewarding drivers who drive cleaner cars. It's something I personally would like to see, said Phil Tidridge, scientific officer at the City Council. I've given up trying to stop people driving cars in the city. I'm a lot keener to get more people driving low or no emission vehicles. Winchester Friends of the Earth recently sent a statement to the planning inspector, who will examine the draft local plan part 2 from July 19th. They point out that air pollution in Winchester City is illegal and that the draft local plan contains no explanation of how the council intends to solve the problem. Friends of the Earth also said they would be setting up a publicity stunt to highlight the problem. However, despite calls to clamp down on parking in the city centre, Winchester BID has called for the council to introduce more, claiming the reduction in car parking capacity is the single most important factor affecting trade performance.
Theresa May promised to give British people more control over their lives after a day of political drama saw her coronation as David Cameron's successor as Prime Minister. The Home Secretary took office as Britain's second female premier yesterday. She was unexpectedly transformed from leadership candidate to Prime Minister designate by the decision of her only rival, Andrea Leadsom, to pull out of the race to succeed Mr Cameron, which had been due to last until September the 9th. Conservative MPs across Hampshire have welcomed the result, predicting that Mrs May would be a formidable successor to Mr Cameron. Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, said, "I back Theresa because I think it's her time and it's the right time for her. There is a challenging period for our country and her experience at the very top of government is going to be invaluable in the years ahead. She had my full support, as did David Cameron. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury said, "There could not be a steadier pair of hands to give leadership and clarity of thought to the challenges the UK now faces. She is someone I can speak of personally because of my time as her parliamentary private secretary during the last government. Very quickly, I saw she provides superb leadership. She listens, she changes her mind when the evidence changes, but relentlessly pursues her goals when she knows she's doing the right thing. I have now worked closely with several government departments, and I've never seen in any other the loyalty and indeed the love that she commands from her staff in the Home Office. They are dedicated to her, and that is a prize not won lightly. So my firm view is she will be the PM. We now know that she is. We need right now for Brexit. But there is much more to Theresa than that. Desmond Swain, MP for New Forest West, and Andrea Leadsom supporter, said that Mrs May would be a formidable Prime Minister, but he had been looking forward to the competition. He added, "I think it's best to get on with it now." Mims Davies, MP for Eastleigh, said, "Theresa May is the best person to be Prime Minister and to negotiate our leaving the EU. Getting a new Prime Minister in place had become urgent. Leaving the decision until September was not in the country's best interests. And there is a Theresa May, the new Prime Minister, in a small photograph in the middle."
A record number of clergy ordained. A record-breaking number of clergy have been ordained at Winchester Cathedral. The largest group of deacons to be ordained in the diocese since 2009 will join parishes across Hampshire and East Dorset. This will mean new curates for the Winchester, Southampton and New Forest areas. Among those being ordained were husband and wife Cliff and Sarah McClelland, who are taking on new roles at St Swithin's Church in Headbourne Worthy. Prior to ordination, Cliff McClelland had a varied career in the military, in finance, and running corporate events. He said, "I can't wait to get going, especially since both Sarah, my wife, and I are being ordained at the same time." The couple will be joined at St Swithin's Church by fellow new curate Jen Holder. Also working in the Winchester area will be Katie Lawrence, who has become the new curate for the cathedral. Tony Palmer has become the new curate for Chandlersford Parish, Jan Parfitt for the parish of Bitton, and Jane Thompson for the United Benefice of Brashfield. 16 people were ordained by the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester. And there's a splendid photograph in the cathedral grounds on a sunny summer's day of the Bishop Tim Dakin in the centre of a group of the 16, eight men, eight women, ordained deacons in their black cassocks and white surplices, each of them wearing a red and gold sash. And the bishop in red and gold also, robes, and mitre. Splendid photograph, all smiling away, very happy to have been ordained and to be starting on their new careers.
Pubs overhaul hopes to exploit gap in the market. A Winchester pub has reopened after an extensive six-figure refurbishment. The William Walker pub in the square, which is owned by Fuller's, had a 6 weeks' worth of work for the revamp. It will now have more craft ales, a new menu, and pubgoers will see a difference in the lighting and the general feel of the pub. The refurbishment cost more than £500,000, and there is now an upstairs dining area, a brass top bar, new lighting, and a redesign of the pub. The new refurbishment has also created up to 15 jobs. The pub was blessed last Monday morning by the Bishop of Winchester, the Reverend Tim Dakin, and was officially reopened to punters on Wednesday. Helping to bring about the refurbishment is current landlord at the Wickham Arms, which is also owned by Fuller's, John Howard. He explained that the pub needed the investment to make it a real dining experience in Winchester. "We felt there was a gap in the market for an ideal drinking environment where you can have a nice cocktail." New landlord Matthew Price, who used to run the Bell Inn in Redhill in Surrey, which is also owned by Fuller's, said he can't wait to hit the ground running. Mr. Price said, "It's a beautiful pub in a perfect location. It has a great team, and I'm excited to get it open and see what we can do with it. I think it is a fresh start. It is that clean slate, and it is not the same pub it was before, and I hope people will give us a chance to see what the pub has created and take away that experience with them." And there's a photograph of a lot of men and very few women and the Bishop of Winchester opening the pub on the Monday.
Public uproar saves 20 refuse centres. More than 20 refuse centres across Hampshire, including Alresford, look to have been saved from the threat of closure. Charges and cuts to opening hours are being introduced to prevent closures after a public outcry. Under proposals revealed on Monday, all 24 recycling centres would close on Thursdays and open at 11 a.m. rather than 9 a.m. as Hampshire County Council pushes through £1.55 million in savings. Council Environment boss Rob Humby said, "No stone has been left unturned to find ways of keeping the sites open." And he promised new and robust tactics to stop fly tipping, which his opponents have warned will increase if access to tips is reduced. Thousands of residents joined local campaigns, with 92% opposing any closures, in a major consultation. Uproar was especially loud in Alresford, though the council never identified sites which could be lost. From October the 1st, the tips will open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, changing to 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. during summer. Hampshire County Council is set to charge £2 for users from outside Hampshire, while small and medium-sized businesses, SME, will be able to dump the same waste as householders for a fee. Dumping the following items will also incur a charge: doors and windows, fitted wardrobes, building materials including plasterboard, bedroom units, ceramics and fitted kitchens, tyres, gas canisters, garden sheds, wooden fence panels, soil and rubble, asbestos and gypsum. Councillor Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said, "I'm very pleased to see that it looks like a way has been developed to meet Hampshire residents' highest priority and keep all of Hampshire's 24 HWRCs open, while achieving the savings the County Council needs to make for this year. Hampshire has a large number of HWRCs compared with other local authorities, and with the continued reductions in government funding, it's clear we simply cannot afford to carry on as before and provide this same service, same 7-day-a-week level of service. No stone has been left unturned in finding ways to make ends meet and keep the centres open." He added, "I realise that there is a concern that any changes to HWRC opening hours could increase fly tipping, which is both illegal and damaging to the environment, and I would like to reassure residents that that we are working on new and robust tactics to tackle this.
Ted Zipwire's To Aid Charity. He wanted to raise money for the charity that has helped care for him. Ted Slack, age 71, took on a zipwire challenge in North Harbour, Portsmouth, to raise vital funds for the Rainbow Centre in Fareham. The Winchester man suffers from progressive supranuclear palsy, PSP, a disease that affects mobility. As a result, he has to use a wheelchair. But for a few moments, the wheelchair was set aside, and Ted flew through the air with the greatest of ease. Now Ted has collected more than £1,000 for the charity that cares for people who suffer with serious illness. His wife, Sally Reynolds, said, "It was amazing to see him on the zip wire. To see him fly through the air like that was wonderful." She added, "When he did it, he enjoyed every minute and smiled all the way through. He'd never done anything like this before. He used to be very, very active." The former Winchester social services worker was touched by the amount of friends and ex-colleagues who sponsored him, added Sally, who lives in Tower Street with her husband. Ted said, "It was fantastic. I would definitely do it again." Little is known about PSP, which affects 6 in 100,000 people. But the disease is hard to diagnose, as many patients display symptoms similar to other neurological diseases, such as Parkinson's or dementia. And there's a photograph of the intrepid Ted Slack celebrating his successful zipwire ride and proudly displaying his certificate in Portsmouth, sitting in his wheelchair, still with his crash helmet and webbing which attaches to the hook on the zip wire. Smiling away, well done, Ted.
OAP driver fleeced in M3 scam. Police are warning motorists after a fraudster flagged down a woman driver close to the M3 near Winchester and demanded cash. The victim was forced to hand over money after stopping to help a man on the M3 slip road at Junction 11 at the Hockley traffic lights. He had flagged her down from the hard shoulder, got into her car and demanded money for fuel. She reluctantly handed him £80 before he bizarrely threw some jewellery at her and got out of the vehicle. The woman, who is in her 60s, was unharmed. The man is described as dark-skinned, around 5'7" tall, and of stocky build. He wore a dark suit and a white shirt. PC Neil Nanharrow said she stopped, thinking she might be able to help, and she would like to warn other motorists of this type of scam. Thankfully, the lady was unharmed. She would like everyone to be made aware of this type of scam. The female victim, who spoke to the Chronicle but asked not to be named, said the man told her he was from Germany and wanted to go to Glasgow, but his car had run out of petrol on Friday, July 1st. She added, "I feel like I do not want to stop for anyone in the road, even if they are distressed. I know it's awful, but I would say, do not stop for anyone. Anyone who recognises the man should contact the police on 101.
An under-fire care provider left staff out of pocket following a payroll error. The administrative error led to some Care Watch staff not receiving the correct wages, with one worker claiming he'd been paid £200 instead of the £1,000 she was owed. It has prompted fears that carers could struggle to visit patients because they rely on their wages to buy petrol. Company bosses blamed an unfortunate human administrative error, but refused to disclose how many were affected. A spokesman for the firm, which cares for people around Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh and Southampton, said, Funds will be in all staff bank accounts by close of play Thursday, and we are apologising in person to those affected. Employee Amanda Thompson has now threatened to quit over the pay problems, which she described as the last straw. She said, "It's appalling, disgusting. I phoned HR this morning to ask, where's my money? They couldn't answer. They said, there's been a glitch." The issues come off a fortnight after staff were given new smartphones to log their hours. Workers use a special app to swipe in and out of visits, allowing bosses to monitor the time spent with clients. CareWatch said, "We regret that on Wednesday, the 29th of June, a number of our staff at Chandler's Ford received pay for some of, but not all, the hours they had worked. This was the result of an unfortunate human administrative error. CareWatch Hampshire South was taken out of special measures by the CQC in May. Its rating has been upgraded from inadequate to requires improvement, with inspectors finding it was still unsafe."
Shuddy scales the heights. She may be terrified of heights, but one Chandler's Ford mother has raised more than £10,000 climbing one of Europe's tallest mountains. Shuddy Ganjavian Connor took on France's Mont Blanc for charity. The 41-year-old wanted to raise vital funds for the Teenage Cancer Trust, which helps young people who suffer from the disease. "Having lost several friends to cancer, I thought about someone losing their child," she said. "As a parent, I couldn't imagine what it would feel like. The money will help the trust, based at Southampton General Hospital, to continue supporting children in need." In the past, Shadi has climbed mountains in the Sinai Desert. However, she had never attempted snowy conditions or minus 27 degrees temperatures. "It was a challenge. The weather was so bad, our guide said we may not be able to reach the summit, but we were determined to do so. When we made it to the top, it was such an amazing feeling, especially thinking of what the money could do for the charity," she added. The cheque was presented at the White Horse in Otterbourne. The trust is not NHS funded and relies on donations. Shadi said that she will undertake another climb next year, most probably the Matterhorn in Italy. However, neither a date or charity has yet been decided. And there's a photograph of Shadi, smiling away, very proud of her achievement. And in the background, the supporters of the Teenage Cancer Trust with their banners, waving and smiling, and no doubt praising Shadi for her endeavours.
Stone tribute to retiring Dean at festival. It's a craft that's been mastered ever since the early days of humanity. Some of England's finest stonemasons descended on Winchester Cathedral for the city's first stonemasonry festival. Over the weekend, the stonemasons took part in a stone carving competition where their work was auctioned. One of the highlights was the cathedral's own mason, Will Davis, carving a new statue for one of its highest points with a twist. Its facial features are those of Dean James Atwell, who retires this week. A spokesman for Winchester Cathedral said, "The festival was well received. We've had more than 18 people participating in the festival from areas across the country, including two of our own stonemasons. And we've had a lot of visitors who've been thoroughly intrigued. It's not something you normally see. You do not see stonemasons doing their work. And this is an opportunity for people to see them in action and how skilled they are and how a piece of stone from a block can find its way to being a piece of architecture on a cathedral or church or any historical building. And among three photographs, there's a smiling Will Davis with his figure of the retiring Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend James Atwell.
A conference on the future of Winchester is being held later this month. The gathering aims to raise and thrash out issues that affect the city over the coming years and ask the question, what sort of city do people want? The event, Winchester Thinking Ahead, is being hosted by Winchester Business Improvement District, City of Winchester Trust, Winchester University, and Winchester Action on Climate Change. The conference at West Down Campus, Romsey Road, is invitation only and will be held on Thursday, July the 21st. It will bring together leading local opinion formers representing varied Winchester perspectives, including informed by contributions by experts to ask what sort of town do you want and how do we get there. The conference will be opened by Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council, and chaired by Martin Willey, former president of the Royal Institute of Town Planning. Guest speakers include Dr. Nicholas Falk, founder of URBED, BED, Urbanism, Environment and Design, and joint winner of the 2014 Wolfson Economics Prize, and George Ferguson, Mayor of Bristol, 2012 to 2016. The conclusions will help the City Council in thinking about what needs to be covered in proposed new planning guidance for future developments in Winchester in the town centre, a supplementary planning document. The clash of vision is already apparent over the Silver Hill and the Station Approach developments. Many members of the public argue both schemes are too large for the city.
Rachel's 4 for 28 gives Easton a worthy home victory. Easton and Marta Worthy beat Bedhampton by 6 wickets in Hampshire League County 2. Visitors Bedhampton recovered from the loss of 2 early wickets to reach 112 for 2 after 22 overs. But Hampshire women's bowler Rachel Carrick had Hovey stumped brilliantly off a wide by Captain Mark Dickerty and then bowled 3 more Bedhampton batsmen before finishing with 4 for 28 from her 10 overs. She was assisted by Matt Chamberlain, who cleaned up the tail with 4 for 23 as Bedhampton were bowled out for 171. Easton started their chase well, with Chamberlain and Adam Kite getting off to a good start before Kite was caught for 15. Easton were 91 for 3 after losing 2 quick wickets, but Dickerty and Chamberlain put on an excellent partnership. With only 6 needed for victory, Chamberlain, 82, ran himself out, but Dickerty finished 39 not out when victory was secured in the next over.
Comparative look at war. To commemorate the Battle of the Somme in 1916, a new exhibition is on show at a military museum in Winchester. As part of the 100th anniversary, the Royal Green Jackets Museum has opened the exhibition called Blood-Soaked Fields. The theme of the exhibition, which runs until September the 11th, compares the Battle of Waterloo in 1815 with July the 1st, 1916, the first day of the Somme. Waterloo was a defensive battle and lasted one day, while the Somme was an offensive and an overall disaster with 57,000 British casualties on the first day. The exhibition looks at the military aspects, but also compares social conditions, treatment of the wounded, and how soldiers were fed. Film footage will be shown, as will uniforms worn by British riflemen in both battles, and a selection of weapons can be examined and handled by visitors. As part of the exhibition, Martin Axton, a local historian, has assembled 4,000 model soldiers in a spectacular display of selected actions from Waterloo. Mr. Axton will be in the museum to speak about the battles on Wednesday mornings until September the 7th, except for August the 14th and 27th.
It's certainly the biggest reminder anyone would need that zebras are set to take over Southampton this summer. Towering at just over 5 metres, this huge sculpture has been installed at Marwell Zoo ahead of the official launch of the Zany Zebra Trail, which opens this coming weekend. As the team at Marwell prepares to install 150 fiberglass zebra sculptures, they've also made way for a surprise wooden zebra sculpture, which is taking pride of place at Marwell Zoo for the duration of the trail. The enormous zebra, tall enough to walk under, was transported from Winchcombe in Gloucestershire to Marwell Zoo near Winchester. The idea to have an enormous zebra sculpture came about when staff at Marwell stumbled upon Zaza the zebra on Twitter. Zaza is a 5-metre-tall zebra sculpture modelled on a plain zebra commissioned by Winchcombe Reclamation Yard to support the plight of the Grevy's zebra and other at-risk species. The Gloucestershire business assigned Cornwall artist Dave Danson Hill to create the colossal structure. When Marwell approached the team at Winchcombe to ask whether they could borrow Zaza for the duration of the trails, the reclamation yard went one better and offered to make an even bigger, bespoke Grevy's version to display at the zoo. The zoo is also hosting a trail of 47 miniature replica Marwell's Zany Zebra sculptures running alongside the Southampton event. The giant zebra sculpture will go on sale for £10,000 at the Marwell's Zany Zebras charity fundraising auction on October the 18th, with half of proceeds going to the charity Grevy's conservation work. Staff at Marwell have given the towering sculpture Gulliver name, inspired by the statue's own travels after it was transported on a 26-ton crane lorry from Gloucestershire to the Hampshire Zoo. Marwell's Zany Zebras project manager Kirsty Matheson said, "We are so excited now that the gigantic Grevy's sculpture has finally arrived. Gulliver is a figurehead at the zoo and will complement our miniature trail perfectly. Every week we will be offering guests the chance to win a cuddly toy zebra by posting their #GiantZelfie on Facebook and Twitter." Marwell's Zany Zebras runs from July the 16th to September the 25th in Southampton and at Marwell Zoo. There are 150 life-sized and miniature Grevy's zebras to find, highlighting their work with this endangered species in the wild. And there is a picture of the giant zebra unveiled at Marwell Zoo, and it really is an enormous beast and very good looking, standing towering over a smaller version, which is extremely jolly because its stripes are all multicoloured, yellow, red, blue, black and so on, and looks very, very good. Great fun.
Fate shows rural life. It only happens once every 2 years, because of the small size of the village near Alresford. Tichborne has a pub, a phone box, a church, and a large house. But the villagers turned out in numbers, supported by people from further afield, for the fete last Saturday. People enjoyed a dog show, bric-a-brac, a barbecue, a silent auction in the garden at Titchbourne House. The proceeds will raise an estimated and impressive £4,500 funds towards maintaining St Andrew's Church. Organiser Catherine Luden said, "We are only a tiny village and it is nice to get something going like this. Everyone was enthusiastic and everyone pitched in." And a number of that everyone appear in photographs. Abby Eves Richards, age 6, struggling with an enormous croquet mallet and attempting to hit the croquet ball at the fete. And the Bolshaw family, mum, dad, 4 children, looks like 2 girls, 2 boys, elder boy in his Batman suit, dad in his shorts. Must have been a nice day. So they were lucky. And a picture of 3 young girls holding up placards, which I can't read. I think one of them says sweets. And they all look quite happy and so enjoying the fete.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.